Great atmosphere around game one of the Stanley Cup final. And now we have some storylines to follow. It's Billard and Shannon with 100% Hockey. Trip Tracy from the Carolina Hurricanes is going to join us to take us inside the series. He was on the call on the radio side of things after the television obligations have run out after the opening round. So that was one of the more eventful games to kick off a Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see now, and it's the one thing that always comes out of the first game of a series, and particularly the Stanley Cup final, is that what happened in the first round of the playoffs, the second round of the playoffs, the third round of the playoffs means squat, nothing. You can say that they had won the first eight games, and then they went 4-1 in series three. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what happened against Philadelphia or against Montreal. And the same thing for Vegas. Doesn't matter what they did against Utah or Anaheim or Colorado. This is what it's all about. Head-to-head, round four, and building and reacting and adapting to what happened in game one now becomes the storyline, the only storyline that is a factor for both the Hurricanes and the Golden Knights.
Dig into it a little bit more. The comeback by the Vegas Golden Knights, who did it again on the road. But some news out of Vancouver, confirmation that Manny Malhotra is taking over from Adam Foote.
Not surprising. I think it was surprising that it didn't happen quicker.
Yeah, that it took as while, as long as it did.
Yeah, but I just think that what is happening in Vancouver, and we saw it through the whole process of hiring Daniel and Henrik and Ryan Johnson, is that they're trying to be thorough in their discussions about where things sit and what happens and how it happens. So Ryan Johnson took his time. I think Manny Malhotra was always his guy. And now that that has happened, Ryan Johnson and Manny Malhotra and Daniel and Henrik Sedin have a real challenge in trying to reinvent what the Vancouver Canucks are all about and reinventing the culture that needs a new injection for the Canucks if they expect to start to go back uphill as opposed to being purely downhill for the last couple of years.
It's one of 32 jobs. It's incredibly valuable. Mm-hmm. But is that going to be a fun job for Manny Malhotra, his first head coaching position in the National Hockey League?
You have to be
you know
a
what
certain,
I mean by that?
Like, no, totally.
It's such a steep grade.
You have to be such a certain type of person to want to be a coach. It's almost
coach
a DNA.
Of a team that's really rebuilding.
Right, but there are some positives in it. They do have a young core of defensemen that could be exciting to work with. Remember, there's going to be five or six players from Manny Malhotra's Calder Cup team 2 years ago that he's going to be able to rejoin with the NHL team. You're right. There's only 32 of these jobs. And it is a passionate hockey market, Darren. It is such a passionate hockey market that if you can turn it around, the rewards will certainly outweigh the disappointments. And so I think that Manny understands that. And Manny is a former player of the Canucks and has had his own journey of frustration as a player in more than one city. That I think that Manny is up for the job, but it's going to take time. And let's hope that there's enough patience at ownership, enough patience with management to give Manny that, 3 year window in order to try to make a difference to have the Canucks back in the playoffs in a relatively short period of time.
They would love to be a perennial Stanley Cup contender, which both Carolina and Vegas are. The Golden Knights win game one in come-from-behind fashion. They took the air out of the Colorado balloon in back-to-back games by a third-period comeback and then rallying from a 3-0 first-period deficit. Do you see a similar trend playing out in the final, the start of it, with being down 2-0 and coming back and winning?
Well, I don't see many trends in this series yet, simply because both coaches won't allow them to have trends. They will adjust. They will be as intense as any of the players. And you can't relax. That's the one thing I think that, you know, that will be a message for both sides out of last night. You know, the goal, what was it, 25 seconds into the game, because Shea Theodore thought he could get to a puck inside the blue line, and next thing you know, it's chipped past him, and Nick Ehlers has a tremendous opportunity to score and does do that, and the place erupts. I just don't think that the coaches will allow their teams to get into any type of malaise at any point. You know the intensity of John Tortorella. You know the intensity of Rod Brindamore. The fact that they are the personalities they are probably more important in this series than the tactics that they will create, because the players know how to play the game at this point, but they may not know how to keep the pedal to the metal on every shift.
Pretty impressive mental strength from Shea Theodore to have that happen in the first shift and then come back and make the plays that he did to generate offense.
Similar situation for Keandre Miller on the other side. When you think the mistake he made going behind the net and fall on the Carlson goal, where he ended up with two guys behind the goal line, and Carlson had a tap in. But the great pass that Miller made on the Jordan Staal goal at the blue line. So that resilience, I think, is something when we talk about mental fortitude, the resilience is going to be a real key for both teams. And that's what makes this series one that it's not two big market teams, but I'll tell you what, they are two great teams. The game last night, Darren, for me, exceeded my expectations. I thought it was going to be a great game, but it exceeded my expectations of excitement.
Because it was looser?
Lots of mistakes. There are lots of mistakes, you know, but that's, you know, good teams force mistakes. And both sides force mistakes at key times.
Well, a real indication of how close it is was we're replaying icing calls and whether or not the players at the red line or not. And it obviously led to a goal in the game. But that's when you know you've got something really dynamic.
You see, that was a bad call. That was a bad call. And it's one of the issues that the league has with the no-touch icing. And it's, you know, that becomes when you have, you know, I still remember when they put the rule in place, they started to make icing a judgment call. We started to make it a judgment call. And, you know, last night it came back and I think it bit the league a little bit on that judgment call. It was a mistake.
It's strange, but I think where the puck is dumped in on an icing is one of the toughest calls to make, whether the guy's actually at the red line or not. And then that race for the puck, and 99% of the time, or not 90% of the time, it's an easy call. But on those races scenario, I don't know how they do it.
Well, and that becomes, you know, there were that becomes one of the challenges of in the old system. You know, 20 years ago, that race would have existed no matter what, and the Golden Knight forward, if he had touched the puck first, play would have continued. If you'd used the international rule, it would have been an automatic icing. So, and they've created in the last 20 years, created this hybrid that with everything that's going on and the speed of the game that has increased so much in that 20-year period, to expect linesmen who are moving themselves to make judgments is a difficult one. That was a mistake. And I did think in my heart of hearts at the end of the night, after Hurdle scored, that it was, I'm sure, and nobody will admit this, there would be a little relief in hockey operations that in the end, the Goss Despair goal did not have a change in the outcome of the
game. Decide the game,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know, I was actually looking forward to overtime. I figured we were going to overtime, and then Sissons with the great play and Hurdle with the great shot.
You wouldn't believe how quiet that building was on the goals.
Is that right?
It was eerie, like on the Vegas goals. It was eerie. I got one for you. After we talked to Trip Tracy, it's left field, but I got one for you after our conversation. But I want to catch up with Trip, who's in the waiting room. The Carolina Hurricanes broadcasters next on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to four games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
My favorite part of this conversation that we're going to have with Trip Tracy from the Carolina Hurricanes is that Trip and I are both in Raleigh, and John, you're the odd man out. You're not at the Stanley Cup final. What gives, man?
You know, after a while, it kind of gets a little boring going to the Stanley Cup final. You know?
Oh, Trip, we'll have to get by without him.
I think I've been to 33, so 33 is enough.
When you're a legend of the game like John is, you know, you can, you know, with those spectacles, you can see it just as well from afar. And I, you know, I've shared this story before, but, you know, over 20 years ago now, John changed my career at the council of my general manager and president at the time, Jim Rutherford, because of his acumen and credentials of all those Stanley Cup finals.
Well, wow. I'm still waiting for that for me, but that's okay. We're patient.
That isn't going to happen. When you said Tripp and I have something in common, I thought you were, you know, wannabe goaltenders. I figured it was the goaltending fraternity starting again. You know, at least Tripp had the cup of coffee, right?
Yes. Yeah.
At least
yeah.
Tripp had the cup of coffee.
There's no comparison on that front. Tripp, let's start by looking back. Your reaction to what we saw in game number one of the more eventful openers of a Stanley Cup final?
Well, my overall reaction is that, the Hurricanes got the start that they would have dreamt of. And I give a ton of credit to, I think, as big of a goal as there was in the game with the net front of Kolesar and the start of just a sensational night for Shea Theodore. Because that 2-1 goal after Ehlers did what he did in the first period, I thought was, at the time and looking back, extremely significant for Vegas. I thought Vegas, you know, in the first 10 minutes of the second period, that was without question their most impressive stretch via their forecheck. I was thinking about it this morning, guys. In the two losses that Carolina's had, in game one last night and game one against the Montreal Canadiens, the conference final, in those two losses, they've given up 11 goals. Their other 12 games, I believe they've given up 13 goals in totality. So that's incredible. So, you know, the defensive zone cover, I mean, you never would have thought, you know, if you were going to score four, even with the stellar nature of Vegas's team, that four wouldn't be good enough to win. Vegas is everything that I knew that they were. This is A-plus hockey team, when I look at last night and thinking about which team's going to get better as the series moves along, John Tortorella talked about it before game one. Carolina has for sure gone like this in their play as series have gone along in their last two rounds. So I'm thinking about that. And the Sebastian Aho line with Seth Jarvis and Andrei Svechnikov, they easily could have won the game. Carter Hart's best save at 4-4. But, you know, genuinely, guys, as I'm having my coffee at this moment, it's got to be now for those guys that they're going to be on the score sheet.
The irony of you mentioned Seth Jarvis. The irony of it is that we always hear and see that Carolina loves to shoot the puck. They shoot from everywhere. And yet there was a couple of times that line had opportunities and they tried to be perfect. You know, there should have been a shot where, you know, they decided to make that extra pass and they lost the scoring opportunity. Do you think those three guys are starting to feel a bit of pressure, Tripp?
John, you know, because as I've shifted to radio since the end of the first round, and John and I have had countless conversations over the years with his coaching, you know, about how to approach radio versus the, you know, the comparison of my foundation being television. And radio on the second period, especially late in the second period, John, Seth Jarvis has a route to the net, you know, and he looks to Svechnikov, tries the trailer and Goss despair, doesn't shoot the puck. And there's a follow-up and he tries to put it on a tee for a Svechnikov one-timer. However one defines, and everybody defines it differently, a natural goal scorer, a pure finisher. For me, even with the way Ehlers is going right now, and Logan Stankoven, Taylor Hall in these playoffs, I think Seth Jarvis, when I look at the ingredients of a pure finisher, he is the guy that fits those ingredients the very most. So I can't stand it when I see him pass up shooting opportunities. Yeah. I can't stand it. And late in the second period was when it was really, you know, on display. And I think when Seth is fighting his headspace just a little bit, a lot of guys then will shoot the puck more. He'll shoot it less. He'll defer more. Sebastian Aho, I thought, was building something in the second round against Montreal. It, you know, last night, didn't love him. I've always thought a total barometer of Sebastian Aho is where he's at in the faceoff circle. I think that's a direct indication of how his overall game is going to be. Svechnikov, I think, has been underrated. You need the production. They're all at about a half a point a game through 14 games, John. But, you know, I didn't think he was the beast-like power forward last night until late in the game, you know, that he was, you know, against Montreal as those games progress. So individually and cumulatively and not passing up any shooting opportunities. And John, you know, they'd have more points if the power play was effective. You're not going to get a lot of power plays at this time of year. They only had two last night, but you know, it can't be a 12% here against an A-level team in Vegas whenever you do get your power play chances. And that group that features those three guys in particular.
One of those power plays was on a closing the hand on the puck call. We don't see that very often, Tripp.
No. And, you know,
it was the right call.
It was the right call. And, you know, it's, you know, Wes McCauley and Chris Rooney, you know, that I thought about it. And I saw Dave Jackson before the game. It is as hard as it is for players to make the Stanley Cup final. How hard is it for referees? There are so many really, really good candidates. And, you know, Wes and Chris, that were both involved in the Olympics in Milan. Chris Rooney, of course, did the gold medal game. And, you know, they just want the players to determine the outcome of the game. And last night was I truly think it would have been 2-2 in power play opportunities. And, you know, then the Jankowski delay a game, you have no choice but to make that call. So, you know, you're not going to get a ton of man advantages. When I first saw that, you know, closing the hand of the puck from Rasmus Anderson, I didn't know if Jordan Staal was going to get an offensive zone penalty because he was in the process of finishing a check. And, you know, that power play just didn't generate a lot. You know, I thought last night at times the Hurricanes power play, they refused to establish the shot. And that's a big reason they're 12% winning power play faceoffs. That's why Jordan Staal went on it at the beginning of December and changed the look of it progressively for a period of time. But I thought their passing execution was far less dangerous than Vegas's power plays, especially Vegas's first power play when they had just gotten their first lead of the night in the second period. Carolina's passing execution on the man advantage tomorrow night has got to be a lot better.
You know, Carolina has lost just two games, but both of them at home, which I'm not sure that's irony or coincidence. But home ice in these playoffs across the board, all 16 teams, hasn't meant very much. Why do you think that is, Tripp?
Well, I mean, I thought that the game that they lost against Montreal, which was their other loss, and also at home, was a central piece of that, John, was the almost two-week break. And they were out of rhythm, and Montreal was in a perfect spot that, you know, they had, you know, if Montreal was, I thought, going to play their best hockey early in the series. Last night, I thought that the rhythm would, of course, favor the Hurricanes, because I thought if they were truly going to compete, and I still believe this against Vegas, they needed to beat Montreal in five games, which they did. So I would say, just specifically to last night, John, you know, you could see Rod with last change, because that's what I think about, you know, that has to be a huge asset in your building. And it was the one priority for Rod last night was the stall line and Slavin and Chatfield, it seems, against Jack Eichel. But Vegas is so deep, like Carolina is, that even if you take advantage of last change to get that matchup, that it gives you an edge, but not that significant of an edge. And, you know, as the Hurricanes have been knocking on the door for all these years, John, part of that has been the sequencing, and it's all been positive, is as the Hurricanes have made the playoffs every year, the first several innings of the ball game, they were dominant at home, but just couldn't win and didn't look like the same team on the road. Now it's gotten to the point where Vegas, I think, went to 7-2 on the road last night. Carolina's perfect on the road, and they've looked really good doing it. Now, with that being said, do I think that they can get down 2-0? And, you know, with what would be three games in Vegas, beat a team of the Golden Knights caliber 4 of 5 games? That's like climbing Everest without oxygen. I'm not saying it can't be done, and I love the way the Hurricanes have played on the road. But I do see tomorrow night is an extremely, extremely important game. And if they can even the series, the Hurricanes, you know, in Ottawa, in Philadelphia, and especially in Montreal, you could make the argument have played better on the road than they have at home. And I can't pinpoint that. The only thing that I can pinpoint, John, is as is John Tortorella's talked about and Rod has seen from his group, which team is going to get better regardless of venue as the series goes along. That team's going to win the Stanley Cup. And both teams have shown a propensity to do that. And the Hurricanes have always had home ice. So, you know, they're already in the trenches of a series when they get on the road. And maybe that's why they've been better on the road in how they've looked in overall fashion than they've been at home.
Was the game one loss in the final different than the game one loss in the Eastern Conference final? Would you look at it differently?
I'd say the common thread was their defensive zone coverage was off. And, you know, because it's been so locked in, it seems in every other game, you know, and all the goals against Montreal, there were 6, you know, 5 last night. So that's 11 goals. You know, when you look at 11 goals that Freddie Anderson, I think one was an empty net, and, you know, and just how few he's given up in all the other games he's played. I don't point to Freddie directly on any of those goals, but maybe, you know, in there's a save that he's making on other nights. So the biggest commonality I see in those two losses is that Carolina's defensive zone coverage, especially last night on Vegas's forecheck against Montreal, it was more in the neutral zone off the rush. Last night, I thought it was just a, you know, skilled, heavy, size-driven Vegas forecheck. So there's,
and that's what you saw on the first goal that you pointed out was the size and the forecheck.
For that stretch, I thought Eichel just took over the game. You know, there early in the second period, and you know, after you know the stall line and Nikolaj Ehlers scored 2 goals playing against Eichel in the first period. So yeah, I Vegas is so patient, just like Carolina has been. They're not going to, A, they're never going to feel that they're out of a game. And B, they're just not going to take a breath. And the Hurricanes, I would say, other than these two game ones, last night in game one against Montreal, extenuating circumstances of coming off the break in game one against the Habs. The Hurricanes have they've taken some breaths and they've made some unforced errors that go hand in hand with taking breaths. So, you know, as this thing moves on to the second inning tomorrow night, you know, if you're fortunate enough to get out to a 2-0 lead like you did last night, you can't take a breath. You can't, because the team you're playing against is in no way, no form or fashion going to think they're out of the game. And if you take a breath, it could turn on a dime. And that's where I thought it did early in the second period because of, you know, the heaviness, everything that the Vegas forecheck brings.
Well, after what Carolina did to Montreal in those four consecutive wins, Montreal didn't have very many scoring opportunities within 20 feet of the goal. Look at where the goals were scored last night. You know, I mean, I look at the William Karlsson goal and even the Hurdle goal and say, hey, you know, where was everybody?
Yeah.
All the success that Carolina had had in previous games was making sure that everything came from the outside. Yeah. And last night, there were too many scoring opportunities, high danger chances, right down the middle of the slot.
You know, John, I'll just you're dead right, and then I'll just pick a couple of things that pop to me, and there are others. But, you know, box outs start long before the guy gets to the front of the net. So how does Kolesar get to the front of the net after you have a chance to clear the puck when you've got all the momentum at 2-0? Okay. So, you know, A, puck should have been cleared. Now Vegas could have said the same thing, Noah Hanifin on Jordan Staal's goal in the second period. But, you know, how do you prevent Kolesar from even getting there to establish positioning? And then you mentioned William Karlsson. Okay. So, you know, that great shift from Jack Eichel, you know, eventually, and I mean, what a terrific shot on the first goal, you know, that Vegas scores of the period to tie the hockey game. But on Carlson's goal, Keandre Miller and Sean Walker both chase below the goal line. That's mistake number one. Number two, Mitch Marner's hockey IQ is through the roof. He's going to know that in real time. And this is where if the Aho line's not producing, they're on the ice, then you need an adjustment and you need probably Sebastian Aho being the low centerman, you know, with Walker and Miller below the goal line and the magician that is the playmaker of Mitch Marner. You know, you need some coverage there on William Karlsson. That's just a glaring breakdown that the Hurricanes have not had. And then Shane Gostisbehere ties the hockey game, you know, and he just took a breath on Tomáš right. Hertl. It's heaviness. It's size that they haven't seen. The Vegas Golden Knights are a different type of opponent. You know, you're there on Tomáš Hertl if you're Shane Gostisbehere, who's taken huge steps defensively. Best defensive hockey I've ever seen him play. But the moment you take that breath, a guy that has the size, the power, and the speed with, of course, the shot that all of a sudden is confident for Hertl, that's all that it takes. So those are just a couple of defensive zone coverage situations last night that I'm not used to seeing. I don't expect to continue to see that was favorable for the Knights in the end.
I want to pick up on that after the break as we continue with Tripp Tracy from the Carolina Hurricanes on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
You mentioned the Karlsson and the Hurdle goals, and just an observation trip. What a sport we get to watch, because Marner and Sissons both made passes on those plays without looking at their teammates. I don't know another sport where that happens so regularly. Even basketball, it's a unique play.
Yeah. So let me preface by saying, you know, going into game two, I have supreme belief in everything that I've seen from this Hurricanes group. They are legit. Now, you know, Kelly McCrimmon, who I didn't know really well until, oh, I'll just tell a quick story that I've always kept private, but you know, it ain't private. It's public that I'm a recovering alcoholic. And when I got my 1 year chip and I gave it to my dear friend, Rod Brindamore, my 1 year of sobriety, I didn't even know Kelly McCrimmon. And when I was a Hartford Whaler prospect, or that might be a stretch, but went to the prospect summer camp, I trained with Brad McCrimmon, who was on the Whalers at the time, just an exceptional guy. And the video of me giving Rod Brindamore my 1 year chip, Kelly McCrimmon must have gotten my cell phone from someone and sent me one of the nicest messages I've ever received, you know, and saying, you know, it's great that you have friends like Rod Tripp, but, you know, be proud of yourself. You know, you did this yourself. And like, and Kelly and I have kept in steady contact ever since then. That was amazing. The greatness of the people of the game of hockey. Now, just specifically what he's done to add to his group. You mention a guy like Sissons, okay, Dowd, you know, Hurricanes are very familiar with him from his time in Washington. Like Frederick Anderson, Rasmus Anderson, represented by God rest his soul, Claude Lemieux. Those no look passes, Mitch Marner. You know, for me, it was going to be an absolute certainty in a new location that he was going to be the elite two-way player that he's been. And so I look at, if I was breaking down the Four Nations Connor McDavid overtime winner, it's a great shot by Connor McDavid, but Mitch Marner in every way, when the stage is the brightest and the biggest in Boston that night, he made the play with that pass. So I looked at that when I went to bed that night and I said, it's only a matter of time. And if Mitch Marner doesn't end up staying in Toronto, wherever he ends up next, that magical, talented, playmaking, no-look vision is going to be a massive benefactor for whoever he plays for next. And he's a two-way player. He makes that no-look pass below the goal line. But Rod Brindamore did an exceptional job with just under 6 seconds left, offensive zone draw. He puts out Alexander Nikishin, you know, because if Carolina wins the draw, Nikishin's got the heaviest shot on the team. You're trying to create the one-timer, which is exactly what they did. And Marner gets over and blocks it. If it gets by Marner, it might be a tie hockey game, 5-5 going to overtime. So, you know, the no-look passes like Marner made to Carlson, yeah, that jumps off the page. But, you know, also that defensive block on Nikishin at the end of the game.
Listen, I think we all expect Mitch Marner to make those passes. We have seen him all the way back to his days in London when he played for Dale Hunter's Knights, that he was a consummate playmaker. I actually had to rewind the PVR to check that it was Colton Sissons that made the pass. I expected from Marner. I didn't expect it from Sissons. And that to me was more impressive than the Marner, because we don't see that from Sissons, who, and Darren, whether this is fair or not, like, it took him a while to feel part of the Golden Knights this year, don't you think? And now he's an amazing part of the success of this team in the playoffs.
Well, yeah, he settled in on that third line since they put the Hurdle Stone Sissons line together. It's been effective.
Yeah, but so the playmaking ability of Mitch Marner, you know, to Tripp's point, sometimes we take it for granted. It's when the other guy did it that you're going, holy smokes, what's going on here? There is something special.
You know, and guys, if Carolina's going to win, which I believe they absolutely can, this pairing that was on the ice, you know, for that phenomenal Sissons no-look pass of Shane Gostisbehere and Alexander Nikishin, they're going to have to be really solid at both ends of the rink, because, you know, they're your third pair, you know, at home, and especially in Vegas, they're going to see different and much more dangerous matchups than they've seen, with all due respect to Ottawa, Philadelphia, and the Montreal Canadiens. And so far, you know, other than last night, they have been up to it. Nikishin, I believe wholeheartedly, he is going to be a top pairing defenseman in this league. the reality, as soon as I knew what Carolina's roster was going to be this year, he was going to have to take some Paul Bunyan-like steps away from the puck and defensively. Now, I know what I know he's going to, at least in my total conviction, think he's going to be in the future, but he needs it now. And I thought that hit that Clevens had on him, you know, heavy and hard in game four against Ottawa, I thought it did him some good. You know, I think he's gotten better as the playoffs have worn along, but he would have, right with the veteran that is Shane Gostisbehere, they would have learned last night. Gostisbehere just tied the game. The building was going nuts. He gets it by Dowd, who I think was trying to block the shot, beats hard on the blocker side, can't take a breath. And you right. especially can't take a breath when now all of a sudden, even at home when you control the matchups, you're playing against Colton Sissons and Tomas Hertl. So, you know, that is what Vegas presents, that with total respect to the teams that were on the path to get here for Carolina, you know, that's why this will be the hardest series for Carolina to win. Do I think they're up for it? Yes, but there just can't be any breaths regardless of where you're at in the game.
Not being in the building, and I know you guys are reminding me of that six times already, not being in the building, was the game as physical as you thought it was going to be?
Darren?
I thought it was physical, and Carolina was physical. It wasn't dirty, it wasn't nasty, it wasn't testy, but it was. I thought it was physical, Tripp.
Yeah, I thought it was everything that you would expect from the physicality dimension from two teams that have won their respective conferences. You know, I thought there was early in the first period, or you know, for a good percentage of the first period, I thought the Hurricanes were more impactful physically, and that stretch in the second period where Vegas established their forecheck, I thought that, you know, Vegas clearly had an edge physically. When I think about the physical dimension, it is going to continue to be which team has a more advantageous net front. You know, yep, the finishes on the outside of the rink, first man pressure on the forecheck, you know, those type of, you know, important physical moments, you know, will be there as well. But, and it really didn't come to be last night. When I look at the razor thin line of all the different dimensions in this series, Frederik Andersen's a little bit taller than Carter Hart. So you would think that Frederik Andersen has maybe the slightest of edges when traffic happens, because a bigger goalie has more of an opportunity to look over it aside from around it. Frederik Andersen had more trouble with traffic than Carter Hart did last night. I mean, Carter Hart, the goals that beat him for the most part were clean shots. The third mm-hmm. and fourth goals, Jordan Staal's got it by, I think, Dylan Coughlin, and then Shane Gostisbehere gets it by Nick Doubt. So getting by that first shot blocker. But I would give the edge to Vegas when you think about physicality, starting with Kolesar's net front on Shea Theodore's goal that gave him life down 2-0. I give Vegas, you know, an edge last night and how important their net front was to, you know, eventually winning when they were down early.
And I call Vegas sneaky physical. And what I mean by that is that they don't go out and not the big bang hits. Barbashev can do it. McNabb can do it. Sure. But they force you to make plays by being physical, bumps and body position. And that's where they will gain the edge on an opposition physically.
Yeah, smart physical. You know, yeah. Hang on, for the legend that is John Shannon. How many Stanley Cups, including so many in the chairs, the producer of Hockey Night in Canada? The physical dimension, the bottom line, is at least how I define it. You know, has changed so much through the years. You know, I'll give a really quick example, guys. The first year of all these playoff runs, you know, when Carolina had just gotten back to the playoffs and they were playing the defending Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals at the time, and they lost games 1 and 2 in Washington. It's Svechnikov's rookie year. So then game 3, Ovechkin fights Svechnikov, scary moment, and Carolina's down 2-0 in the series. You know, you're playing against Tom Wilson and company. Tom Wilson, you know, probably not popular to say in Carolina, one of my favorite players and people in the league. And the Hurricanes are down 2-0 in the series. Svechnikov has just left the game on the way to the hospital. and the Hurricanes could have lost their minds and that series would have been over in an instant. What they did is how you define physicality. And Darren, you were just mentioning it with regards to Vegas. Whistle to whistle, finishing every check that you can, protecting your own net, finding a way with however you do it to get to the opposing net. That's physicality. That's how you excel in that dimension, you know, to win. It's not, you know, the thunderous hits will be there, but that's, especially at this stage of the year, that's what I look for, what I see, who's going to have an edge in that department.
Mike, your mic's got to be turned off. Turn on.
Well, that's an amazing story. That I think that's the first time in 50 years my mic's been off. Tripp, you mentioned that we've known each other a long time now. And we actually had a blast 20 years ago when Carolina won its Stanley Cup in 2006. And I admitted I was a closet Kaniac because it was so much fun to be in that arena, so much fun to be around in the parking lots. I never ate more pork in my life than I did those 2 weeks. this franchise has gone through a few metamorphoses in that 20-year period. Is this a hockey town now?
Yeah, I no doubt about it. Now, the one remaining step, John, for me would be when I think of the dream, you know, with what I think it is truly in every way become fabric of the triangle here. Now, the remaining step would be, you know, with the growth of youth hockey here, that a player that has played AAA hockey that plays before college or junior, whatever it is, plays the vast majority of his youth hockey career in Carolina, gets drafted by the Hurricanes in the first round, then plays for Carolina. For me, that's the one remaining step, and I think the area is well on its way to achieving that. I'm going to pick one example. Now, the 10 years without the playoffs, with all that you teach me and continue to teach me, John, that was the greatest growth tool for a broadcaster that I could ever have. Treating every game as an independent entity. You know, this has been cakewalk broadcasting since, you know, the 2018-19 season. The 10 years without the playoffs, mm-hmm. where, you know, you satisfy the objective fan, yet sell the game and don't get yourself fired. That's the greatest experience I've ever, that's the greatest experience I've ever had as a broadcaster all those years with John Forslund at the time. But when I was driving into the stadium series a couple years ago at the North Carolina State football venue against Washington, and I was listening to a country song on the way in. And as far as I could see at about 2 o'clock on that Saturday afternoon, tailgaters, as far as my eye could see, and John, not just tailgaters, all in Hurricanes jerseys. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, having been here since the second year, at least broadcasting the second year in Greensboro before the arena was even finished. That was the moment for me, that listening to that tune, driving into the building before that stadium series game, not just the, as far as one could see, the tailgaters, but all of them in Hurricanes jerseys. There's no doubt about it. It's a hockey market. And then from the hockey side of things, John, once it becomes a hockey market, the expectations get higher and higher and higher. And that's why I think it's a good thing. As you're down 1-0, you found a way to get back to the Stanley Cup final for the first time in 20 years. And that's why it's a good thing that there's pressure on that Sebastian Aho, Andre Svechnikov, Seth Jarvis line. That comes with being a hockey market. And so absolutely, in every way, I'm way out here in God's country in North Raleigh, but when I'm going to walk my dog on the street to the trail, people are stopping on the road all the time, you know, and, you know, because they know who my dog is, you know, because they're big Hurricanes fans. So it's become fabric.
What's your dog's name? What kind of dog?
Yeah, he's over in the corner sleeping right now because he knows his walk's common. He's a Labradoodle. His name is Frank, and he's named after Sinatra as a constant reminder my way wasn't working.
love that story. That's outstanding. Hey, it's almost unfair that Carolina's got pressure on them after the run that they've had in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but it's true. How do you look at game two?
Well, I look at game two with total confidence in this Hurricanes group because they've shown it to me. And they've only had to respond now to two losses. But I look at game two, you know, as close to a must win as you can have, only because if you don't win, you're going to have to beat a team that is the caliber of Vegas, same caliber as Carolina, but you'd have to beat them 4 out of 5 times. And 3 of those 5 times would be in their building. And So the reality, but this Carolina team, in every way, I walked out of the building last night with Rod Brindamore's wife, Amy, and their son, Brooks. And one of the things I said to her is, I said, Amy, you know, the Hurricanes, truthfully, they've played better on the road than they have at home. But I have always believed people will argue home ice until the cows come home. And at this point, and John alluded to it earlier, how important is it? I happen to believe as the playoffs get to their deepest point, that being the Stanley Cup final, it matters. I certainly believe when John became a closet huge Caniac, you know, in that series against the Edmonton Oilers, do I think that the Hurricanes would have beaten the Buffalo Sabres to get to the Stanley Cup if they didn't have home ice in game 7? Would they have beaten the Edmonton Oilers if they didn't have a fan base that stood on their feet for the entirety of the game? My answer, we'll never know, but my conviction is no. So, you know, if Carolina can even this series at 1, as good as they've been on the road, you just start, it's a best of 5. I don't mind the fact that Vegas has home ice at that point in time. It's not a must win tomorrow, but for me, with total belief in the Hurricanes, even with how I know they will play out in 100-degree temperature in the desert of Vegas, I believe it's as close to a must win as you can have.
The key thing, and Darren, you touched on it a little bit, and Tripp, you have mentioned it particularly when it comes to Shane Goss despair. This is a series, and these are games you cannot relax for 1 second. You can't. And so a series, that was a missed opportunity last night for the Hurricanes. That was a missed opportunity. And so the learning curve that you have of how to play a Stanley Cup final game every shift. I mean, I can only imagine Rod's very, very brief coaching symposium for his guys today or Thursday morning is we cannot afford to relax for 1 second. If we do, the puck will be in the net. And that's exactly what happened last night a couple of times, and it cost them the game.
Hammer hit squarely on the head. And, you know, Rod would also say, John, that what is the journey to try to win the toughest trophy in sports? It's the mental challenge that is more of a requirement than the physical challenge. And the fact that this team has had 2 sweeps and beat Montreal in 5, they should be as mentally fresh as any team can be at this point in time. So as Rod in the symposium, great word, would deliver that exact message. There hasn't been, you know, with the magical things this team has done, it hasn't been mentally taxing. The other area I think about as this thing goes on, boys, is the faceoff dimension. Vegas is perfectly situated that they've got righties and lefties. I talked to my dear friend Paul Maurice before the playoffs even started. And one of the things we talked about was faceoffs because the Hurricanes were about to play Ottawa, and Ottawa was a premier faceoff team. They had lefties and righties. And, you know, Mo, who won the last 2 Stanley Cups, I just talked to Alexander Barkov yesterday. Congratulations to him with what he's endured. He dug in this year and winning the world championship with Finland. But Mo said to me, you know, if you take a ton of faceoffs through 4 rounds, it's going to take a toll on your centerman. So especially a guy like Jordan Staal, when, you know, Sebastian Aho, I said it's a direct barometer for his game. Can Jankowski win draws? Stan Coven has actually done a pretty decent job as a first-year centerman, your lone righty. So I think, you know, the fact that they haven't played as many games as, you know, most often teams in the Stanley Cup final, I'm hoping that's going to help them against a great face-off team in Vegas when they've got righties and lefties. But they should be, John, fresh mentally. That should give themselves their best chance to truly comprehend mentally first and then physically in execution that, you know, Sting was just here and I'm sure saying every breath you take. He just was here in Raleigh. You know, you got to have the antithesis of this song, that song, because if you take a breath and it was a missed opportunity last night with putting four goals on the board, it's going to cost you against a team that has won a cup and has added some great pieces like Vegas has.
And the Golden Knights have seven guys that take draws regularly, and they've been able to lean on that. You're right about the righty-lefty part. Just a fun one before we go. When you drive in towards the facility, it may be a world record for traffic cones separating the lanes. Who sets those things up every game? Because there's miles of them.
Darren, this is a running joke, you know, because I signed with the Whalers in 1996, and then our owner at the time, Pete Karmanis, you know, gave me the job because he believed in me when I had no TV experience at 24. It's a running joke that I show up, I do the games, I leave. I don't know, you know, like the people that are in the trenches in yeah. the, you know, it, behind the scenes, including who's in charge of those cones, you know, I wouldn't even be able to come up with the guess. But that's a very significant. That's a very significant job, and so I will.
I've never seen anything like it, and they do it every game, like between the morning skate and coming back. There's miles of traffic cones set up.
I'm going to dig in and I'm going to get you that pylon answer and parlaying it to what John was just talking about. Don't take any breaths, because if you do in Sissons, you know, like with the way he played last night and Hurdle's on the ice, then all of a sudden, you know, you're going to look like a pylon. But I'm going to find out. I'm going to find out who sets up those cones.
Yeah. You see, Tripp, this is what I'm up against. You and I have had a great conversation in depth about the rights and wrongs of the games, and Millard's worried about traffic cones. This is the world I'm in. He's worried
about
traffic.
It'd be a great retirement job, I think.
Don't you understand that, you know, that's the same parking lot for the football stadium, and they have to set that up 6-7 times a year anyway?
I know, you know? But you think it would just be there'd be some more permanent circumstance where they can infrastructure set up there.
By the way, in watching the pregame show on ESPN last night, a fantastic stat, 18,000 people in the building, 20,000 parking spots in that area. So there's lots of places to tailgate.
Good point. Frank Sinatra, My Way, I'll segue. It's not as famous of a song. But,
by the way, what's the name of your dog, Darren? What's the name of your dog?
Our dog is Bear and Oreo.
See, like Tripp and I, like he has Frank. Mm-hmm. I have Gordy.
Yeah.
You have
Bear and Oreo.
You have Bear and Oreo. Come on. Get with. I mean, you obviously don't name your dogs. You're not in charge.
I have teenagers and I have no right to do anything in my house. No privileges at all. My Way from Frank Sinatra, I'll go to a lesser known song. I get a kick out of you. And that's what I do with you, Tripp Tracy. I appreciate it. Thanks for doing this. I'll see you around the rink.
Darren, John, thank you. And just landing the plane very quickly. We've had to put it on hold because these two coaches are facing one another. But speaking of my dog, Frank, Rod Brindamore, John Tortorella, and I have had an ongoing group text for the last few years because Rod is a rule follower. The law is that Frank should be on the leash. He lives a better life off the leash. He chases deer, but he always comes back. And on the group text, my man Torts always has my back. Every time that RB says he should be on the leash, I knew late in the Montreal series after the Golden Knights were able to advance, you know, and beat Colorado. I sent a group text to my friends, George McPhee, Kelly McCrimmon, and John Tortorella. I knew I wouldn't talk to him during the series. And I, in that group text, I said, Torts has always got my back, because when Rod says Frank should be on the leash, Torts says, let him live.
Some coaches don't follow that, but players do appreciate it all the time. We'll be back with more on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to 4 games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
Boy, I didn't know that you were making payments to Trip Tracy's bank account.
I'm not.
He's all over you. He's loving you.
Well, it goes back a long way, and he's right. Jim Rutherford phoned one day. I had just started at the league, and Jim phoned, and he was running the Hurricanes at the time, and said, "Would you spend some time with our TV color man, Trip Tracy?" And at that point, I didn't really have any clue who Trip Tracy was. So I don't tell Trip that, but so we got together a few times and went through some tape. And
what did you do with them?
Well, there's a couple of simple little things is remember who you're talking to. You're not talking to people that know the game of hockey as well as you do. You're not doing that job for the boys on the beer league team. You're doing it for people that don't necessarily understand the game of hockey as well as you do. And the other thing was, you know, to be quick. You know, don't take 50 seconds to say something when you can say it in 15 seconds. And then, you know, try to put the analysis in a way that the guy at home can understand. And there's nothing wrong with stating the obvious. There's nothing wrong with stating the obvious. So there's lots of little things, and it became an ongoing scenario. Because I was at that point in my career, I was sitting in the Situation Room almost every night, because it was a great place to watch 8 or 9 games. And then would make notes and send notes to broadcasters if I thought they were making mistakes or their information was wrong, or in Tripp's case, if I thought I could help make him better. And that's exactly what it, and for a lot of guys, it continues even to this day. So there's every once in a while, like, we get into a discussion on text during a game about why did you do this? And hey, watch this play, and maybe you should mention this.
Vegas was more positive about the first period performance than I expected last night. What was your reaction to what John Tortorella and several of the players said, that they thought they were getting good chances, even though the score didn't say that?
I'm not sure they were getting good chances when the shots were 9-3 at one point, and mm-hmm. it was 2-0 for Nick Ehlers. By the way, it's funny that we didn't mention Ehlers very much. Ehlers had a great game, and when you look at the two unrestricted free agents of last summer that have had an impact on their teams, Mitch Marner and Nick Ehlers, it's fascinating to see what they can do. By the way, the other guy that wasn't very good last night, you know, Taylor Hall. You know, Taylor has had such a good playoff. Taylor Hall has to get back in the game now. You know, that Stankoven, Blake Hall line was a driver for 3 rounds. It wasn't necessarily a factor last night as much as I saw, Darren. They need to be better, and Taylor Hall needs to be better as a veteran on that. The thing that I think got played up well was the TV timeout, where John mm-hmm. brought the guys to the bench and told them, just relax.
He was positive in that situation, whereas some coaches let you have it.
Yeah.
Now, it was delivered in a stern way, but it was all positive.
Right. And that was, I mean, obviously the Theodore goal was the real turning point, but just that 2 minute break where the coach said, boys, take a deep breath. You know, we're still in the game. This is not a problem. I think was a reset for the hockey club. And then from that point on of that TV timeout to halfway through the second period, in my mind, the Golden Knights were by far the better team. So the second half of the first period, it went almost as expected for me. You know, reset, score the goal, and then go into the room, let the players discuss it themselves, and they know exactly what has to happen. And they came out and scored 30 seconds into the second period, and all of a sudden, you wonder if, are the Hurricanes reeling now after blowing a 2-goal lead as opposed to the Golden Knights reeling after giving up 2 quick goals in the first period?
How about Brett Howden? 11 goals in the playoffs, 12 all year. Missed some time, but 12
and
all year.
You know, the history of the Stanley Cup playoffs is rife with not the superstars having big moments. You know, we talked about this the other day. Through the dynasties of the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, there's always that group of guys on the championship teams that contribute and have great playoffs. You can't help but remember a guy like Bobby Bourne for the Islanders. And the guys in Pittsburgh, Chris Kunitz, playing in Pittsburgh and with Sydney. Those second tier guys make differences, and that's what championship teams are made of. And Howden's fits that mold perfectly right now.
Left field, you ready for this?
Before left field, we mentioned Manny Malhotra. We didn't mention Chris McFarland. You know, to no one's surprise, Chris McFarland is now the president of hockey operations and general manager in Nashville. So that's a big move for him. You do wonder what kind of influence that will have in Denver for the Avalanche, and whether Joe Sakic will, not necessarily in the short term, but in the long term, will Joe Sakic bring someone in to assist him in trying to get the Avalanche past the third round of the playoffs? So that's a big move for Nashville. McFarland has an opportunity to get out from under the shadow of Joe Sakic to prove that he's the brains of a hockey operations, and we'll see what influence that has. The other one is, here's my left field before your left field. When do we start hearing that
right
Barry
field.
Trotz?
I've got left field.
Okay, right field. I'll be the right field guy. When do we start hearing about Barry Trotz becoming a coaching candidate? Because Barry Trotz, who I know has said he's retired, I know that he's going to be on the lake in British Columbia having a good time and taking it easy. And I guarantee you there are teams that have already touched base with him, asking him if he wants to coach again.
Do you think he wants to coach again?
Right now he doesn't, but he's a coach. And we talked about the mentality of being a head coach that Malhotra is going to have. Barry Trotz has that. I guarantee you, you know, when we get into October, November, December, and there's a team reeling, are we going to start hearing Barry Trotz's name somewhere? That's my right field.
That was more hockey.
That was my right. Okay, what's your left field then?
Okay. So British Columbia and Alberta aren't changing their clocks.
They become Saskatchewan.
Right. And I saw a story on how that affects doubleheaders and start times in the West.
Start times. It will affect start times, no question.
And what will somebody like Rogers with those doubleheaders, what will they do?
Oh, no, no. But they first of all,
you start the games at 8 o'clock in Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary.
By the way, when the doubleheader started in 1995, second games of the doubleheader started at 8:30 in Calgary and Edmonton. And both teams were pissed off. Both teams were pissed, but they did because we needed the doubleheader to fit into the window on a Saturday night. So they will just adjust. They will you know, if the doubleheader, I mean, there's too much math involved right now for me to figure out what happens with daylight saving time and standard time. But if the games start at normally 7 p.m. Pacific, which will be where Seattle and San Jose and LA and Anaheim and Vegas play, it will be 7 p.m. Pacific, whatever that is in BC time or Alberta time. So that's why we're going to all measure it with, you know, it all starts at 10 o'clock Eastern. So whatever 10 o'clock Eastern is in Alberta and British Columbia, that will be the start time. Live with it. You know,
so it'll be 8 o'clock because you've only got a 2-hour time difference and a 3-hour window there.
Right. Right. So that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
But as I said, this is nothing new. When we started the doubleheader in 1995, I was doing, I got a phone call from the president of the Calgary Flames, just livid at me. I said, well, you know, that do Ken? You not want, what's that?
That Ken King?
No, it was before him, Ron Bremner.
Oh.
just livid saying, how do we expect people to show up at 8:30? Well, you like our money, you know, so, and we were trying to give you a prime time game on Saturday night. You didn't want to play at 6 o'clock, play at 8:30. So that's what happened.
As I was going through this discussion, I thought all this discussion about whether you change the clocks or not change the clocks, it might come down to people's affinity for the start time of National Hockey League games. Well, that might be a major influencer on it.
Well, it will affect, though, on non-national nights, it will affect travel. You know, when you think of losing an hour of travel time, particularly in back-to-back scenarios, because that will be at some point be a factor that that teams will have to figure out what to do. Now, everybody adapts and adjusts, but remember the old 24-hour rule, which never really was a rule. They're going to have that scenario figured out. That okay. We're flying from Seattle to Vancouver. We're going due north, and we're going to lose an hour.
Doesn't make much sense, does it?
No, it doesn't.
We'll talk to everybody as we make our way through this Stanley Cup final. Looking forward to game number 2. What awaits us on the other side of that? We'll discuss it on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.